And for locating resources, we had three different approaches that we looked at. The centralized style approach, which Napster is just one example of the centralized, where we basically have a central server that keeps the index of everything. Then we had the opposite end, where we had this fully distributed approach, where we just have all our nodes, and to search, we flood a message, and that goes to all the nodes. And Nutella is one example of this fully distributed approach. And then we went through a mixed approach, which combined the advantages of both of them, having some super peers, which index local information, and then some... The peers contact their super peers, and between super peers, they communicate using flooding. So the super peer architecture, of which FastTrack is one example, is trying to combine the advantages of the previous two. And then we changed topics a little bit to looking at BitTorrent, which is not about what these are doing, but is about the how to make the download, the data transfer, efficient. So that looked at a different problem with peer-to-peer systems of how to efficiently download or transfer the data when we looked at BitTorrent. Now we're going to go back to a fourth approach for searching called distributed hash tables. And that's the final thing that we'll cover this semester. So, distributed hash tables have been motivated by the disadvantages of a centralized approach, the inefficiencies of Nutella, and so is trying to improve upon all of these. And at the end, we'll see how it improves upon them, or what the trade-off makes. Distributed hash tables, the concept, are really algorithms used for peer-to-peer systems. They're not necessarily a protocol or an application. There are specific, or there are variations of distributed hash tables, so some of the names are Cord, Pastry, Tapestry, and there are other algorithms. BitTorrent is an example of a protocol and application that actually uses distributed hash tables. So we looked at BitTorrent from the perspective of the protocol for transferring the data. But of course, that also needs to be searched to be able to locate other peers. And BitTorrent can use distributed hash tables. So these mechanisms for searching, locating resources, can be brought together with the mechanisms used for the efficient data transfer. And other practical networks use distributed hash tables. Some networks which are used for caching internet data, that is, when you access a web server, sometimes you don't directly access a web server of Microsoft, you access a cache of that web server, which is usually located nearby and is much faster to access. So there may be a cache for Thailand, another cache for Singapore and other countries. To distribute content across all those caches, there are specific protocols in use, and some of them use distributed hash tables as well. So we're going to explain what is a distributed hash table and how is it used for peer-to-peer systems. We'll see that it's a structured peer-to-peer system, that there is index information distributed amongst the other peers, and that it's a flat architecture. There are no concept of super peers. There's no concept of a central server. So it's similar to the Nutella in a flat architecture, but Nutella was an unstructured peer-to-peer system, in that no nodes stored index information about other nodes. That's not the case in distributed hash tables. So let's try and explain what a distributed hash table is using Cord as an example. It takes a few slides to go through the concepts, and then we'll get to an example. So let's, to start, we have n nodes in a network. In our peer-to-peer system, let's say we have n nodes, n computers across the internet which want to form a network. Maybe those computers are using BitTorrent, and the nodes in a swarm are those n nodes. And the aim is to distribute files amongst the nodes and to locate those files. So if we have 100 nodes in the system, there are files distributed amongst them, and when I'm looking for a file, I need to find the peer that has that file. That's our problem. What we do is we assign some identifiers to the nodes or to the peers using a specific mechanism, and in this case we use what's called consistent hashing. We use a hash function, and we introduced or we mentioned a hash function used in a different purpose last week. In BitTorrent we use hash functions to calculate a unique ID of a file. Here we use hash functions to assign IDs to nodes and to resources. So, what a hash function does is some function that takes an input, and that input is usually variable sized. That is, it can be tens of bytes, tens of megabytes. A variable size input, and it produces an output. We generally call it a hash value, which is fixed size, usually small. In this example, we're saying it's 160 bits. And the objective of a hash function is that you take two different inputs, you'll get two different outputs. The hash of input 1 should not equal the hash of a different input, input 2. That's one objective of the hash function. And that is, if the input is a file, if we take the apply a hash function on a file, we get some hash value, some fixed size value, say 160 bits in length. If we take a different file and apply the same hash function, we should get a different 160-bit value. And normally those values are random or appear random. If you take the hash of the same file, then you should get the same hash value. The hash of input 1 and some later date we apply the hash of the same input, of course we should get the same value. So we can use a hash value to identify some resource, also some node. Because two files which are different will have different hash values. Two files which are the same will have the same hash value. We do in distributed hash tables is we take our resource, say our file, and we obtain an identifier of that by taking a hash of that file, usually the entire file, not just the file name. And that produces a key. We've already mentioned before, a resource has a key. This is one way to obtain a key. The hash function used in distributed hash tables, or in CORD specifically, is called SHA-1. That's just the name of the function. There are other functions, but this is just one that's used, commonly used. What we also do is, to get the ID of a peer, we take the hash of that peer's address. Normally the IP address, sometimes also the port number used by the application, and even some other identifying information. So, my computer, which has some address, IP address, and some port number, so that internet, if we apply our hash function, we get let's say it's the number. That would identify my computer, someone else's computer, maybe on the same subnet, using a different port number. Number, take the hash of that, and that identifies this computer or peer in the system. Normally, with 160 bits, the total possible number of values 2^160. So many possible values for the ID. A hash of the address to identify a peer, and the hash of a file or a resource to identify that resource, that is, to give us the key. We'll see why that's important as we go through the actual mechanism. We can think about the peers in the system as some circle. Let's say we have 10 peers in our system. The number of nodes is 10. Then we have 10 computers. Let's identify them as circles here. Conceptually, we will think about those computers in some relationship to each other that forms a circle. These are our 10 computers in our computer system. This could be my laptop. This could be a computer in the US. This could be a computer in Germany. Anywhere. When we take the hash value of the ID address and port number, it gives us an ID. And we can think about those peers in the ordering of their ID. So if our ID of this computer was 1, this computer had an ID of 2, then there's some relationship between them based on their ID. 10 computers, anywhere. Internet, if their IDs the 10, then we could visualize them as in some circular structure. They're connected in this way, but when it comes to searching and knowing them, we'll use this concept. So, we have n nodes in the system. Every node has an ID. That ID is obtained from its address, its real address. Every resource has a key. That key is obtained from a hash of that resource. A resource with key K should be stored at node with ID equal to K. And this is, we'll see the relationship between the nodes, the node IDs and the keys. So in our example, if we have 10 nodes in our peer-to-peer system and there's some file, and we take a hash of that file, that hash is the resource. We take a hash of that resource and we obtain some value. This is the key for that resource. that resource ID equals, in this case, it's this node. So, we'll use this when we do the search, but let's see how it works, or two different ways of how it can be applied. We have 10 computers in our peer-to-peer. Let's say computer 1 is my laptop, and I have the file ISO that I want to share to other people. I want to make this file available. What I do is I insert this resource into the peer-to-peer system. So, calculate the hash of the resource, and in this example I obtain the value 7. The resource has a key. That tells me store that resource on node 7. So even though I had the file originally, I want to make it available to others. Need to transfer that file to node 7. And so, in fact, node 7 stores the file. It will make search easier. Now, we could have a variation in practice. Instead of transferring the file to node 7, I could simply tell node 7 I have the file. So there's two variations there. Or node 7 saying, if someone is looking for this file, ubuntu.iso, then later, node 4 is the file. If node 4 is the file, then file will give us a key of 7. Immediately, node 4 knows to find the file Ubuntu. Node 7. Because the scheme is each resource is located at the node with the same ID as the resource key. As key 7, this node is ID 7. Therefore, if ask node with ID 7, that makes search easy. Saying, I'm looking for this file. We transfer the file to node 7, and it can immediately send a message to node 7 saying node 1 has the file. Then node 7 could respond saying, contact node 1. Depends on how we implement this phase of inserting a resource into the system. So the idea is to make search simple. If we go back to our original schemes, in Napster, search was simple, to send a request to the server. But relying on a server is not good. In Nutella, search is not good. It's very inefficient. We need to flood a message through the entire network. With FastTrack, it was a trade-off between the two. It's efficient if we are searching for a resource nearby that our peer has, our super peer has. It can be less efficient if we're searching for a resource which is available at a different super peer. We're trying to make search simple, especially when we scale tens of thousands or millions of nodes. The idea is that every resource with a key K will be known by the peer with ID equal to K. Then we define that peer. We'll see this in more examples. Let's continue on with the other concepts. So, A resource with key K is stored at a node with ID equal to K, where K is the key which is obtained from the hash of the resource. The ID is obtained from the hash of the node address. With a 160-bit hash value, there are in fact 2 to the 160 possible IDs and similar 2 to the 160 possible key values. In our peer-to-peer system. And each node has an ID. In general, or if there's a 160-bit hash, there are a maximum possible number of nodes of 2 to the 160. But in our system, there may not be 2 to the 160 nodes. Let's say there are only 10 nodes in our network. Be so convenient that each node gets an ID in sequential order. What it could be is that this is node 1, node 403, this is 1021. And so on. That is, take the IP address and the port number and calculate the hash value we will not get the numbers 1 to 10 these 10 so what we visualize or another way to visualize this network is if we'll show an example shortly. Here, if we have a 4-bit hash value instead of a 60-bit hash value, then there are 16 hash value. There are 2 IDs. And therefore, we have a maximum number of nodes of 16. So in the real DHTs, there are 160-bit hash values. But to keep things simple, let's say there's a 4-bit hash value, just so we don't have so many nodes. If there's a 4-bit hash value, there are 16 possible IDs and 16 possible keys. So we can say there are 16 possible nodes. Node 0 up to node 15. When we take the address of my computer and I calculate the hash of that address, it would give me one of these 16 values. My computer may give a hash of 6, for example. So this would be my computer, node 6. Someone else's computer, we take their IP address and port number, we hash that value, we may get the value 11. So this node would represent the second person's computer. So what we do is we think about the maximum number of nodes in some ring or some circle where there are IDs for each of the nodes, but in practice not all of the maximum number of nodes may exist.
Let's go back and explain the concepts.
So, said that a resource with key K is stored at a node with ID equal to K. But there may not be a node with that ID that exists in the network. If there's not, then the resource is stored at the node that has the next highest ID. So if the resource had the key 7, but there was no node with ID 7. In this case, with ID 7. There's a node with ID 1, 403, 1021, and so on. But if we have a resource with key 7, we store that resource on the node with the next highest ID. So 7 doesn't exist, 8 doesn't exist. The next highest ID in this case is 403. Will be stored on this. We'll see this in a moment. So let's go into some more detail of our example. And I'll draw the example network, which is on the subsequent slide, of those 16 nodes. In our example, to keep things simple, we're saying our hash function takes some input data and produces a hash value. And the length of that hash value is 4 bits. With 4 bits, we have 16 possible values, 0 through to 15. So the maximum number of nodes in our network, in this peer-to-peer system, is 16 nodes. Let's draw them. This is just the diagram that you've got on one of your slides. Did I miss one out? That's a problem. 3. We need another node. So this is the maximum possible number of nodes in our peer-to-peer system. There are 16 possible nodes. Of course, no good in practice, but easy for our example. There is a set of computers that want to be part of this peer-to-peer system. Their IDs obtained from taking a hash of their address. So, if computer 1 has our address, IP address and port number, take a hash of that, and it gives us a value which is between 0 and 15, because it's a 4-bit hash. That gives us the value 9. Then, conceptually, we'd say that this computer is the computer with IP address 72.16.3.4, port number 50123. And if I have another computer in the internet, I'll take the hash of its IP address and port number and get another value, let's say node 9. And we have a maximum of 16 nodes in this system, but of course we may have less. Maybe we only have 5 or 10 nodes in the system. So of the 16 nodes, some of them nodes exist. Others do not.
It's maybe easier.
So here's the example which we'll get to. I've got slightly different addresses. In this example, we start with 7 nodes, 7 computers in our peer-to-peer system. These are some IP addresses. I've omitted port numbers. We could include them as well. And we take the hash of these values, and we get these IDs. So the nodes in our system are 0, 1, 0, 1, 3, 7, 6, 11 is not initially, 9 is not, 11 is, and 14. So our peer-to-peer network has 7 computers in it at this stage. If a new computer wants to join this peer-to-peer system, it needs to get an ID, and it's going to manage different keys for that particular ID. So, we said before that if we have a resource with key equal to 7, it should be stored on node 7. So, if we have a resource with key equal to 6, it should be stored on node 6. If we have a resource of key equal to 4, where is it stored? I have a resource equal to 4. Where is this resource? A resource with key equal to 4. Which node is going to store that resource? You have 16 possible answers. Give me one of them. Does node 5 exist? No. There is no 5. No node 5. There is no node 4. It should be, in theory, stored at node 4. But there is no node 4 in this case. Therefore, we take the next node that exists. Node 5 doesn't exist. We would say resource with key 4 would be managed or stored at node 6. So we could say node 0 would store resource with key 0. Node 1 would store resource with key 1. Node 3 would store resource with key 3, as well as resource with key 2. Because node 2 doesn't exist, therefore the next node along for resource with key 2 would store it at node 3. Therefore node 6 would have, using the same concept, keys 4, 5, and 6. That is 4, 5, and 6. The black ones are the keys. Node 7, 8, 9, and 10 don't exist. Node 11 would have resources with keys 8 through to 11. And it's circular, so that node 0 actually stores key 15 as well. So that's how we visualize or can think about the relationship between nodes and the keys that they manage. So now, what if a new node wants to join the network? In the example, I think it's node. Okay, so that summarizes what we have. These nodes key values for their own node and the predecessors. Node 11 has 8, 9, 10, and 11. Node 6, 4, 5, and 6. So that's the keys that they manage. What if a new node wants to join the network? Someone else's computer wants to join this peer-to-peer system. That computer, we take the IP address, possibly also the port number, hash, and we get node 9, the ID 9. So now we have a new node. When a new node joins the network, there's some reassignment of keys needed. And the reassignment is have to be from node 11, the next node in the system. Because previously node 11 stored keys 8, 9, 10, 11, but now with the presence of node 9 should store keys 8 and 7, sorry, 8 and 9, and node 11 should not store those keys. So when a new node joins the network, there needs to be some communications with the successor node in the network. The successor of node 9 that exists is node 11, so that the keys are updated, the keys that they store are updated. And the same when a node leaves the network. If node 6 left the network, then the keys 4, 5, and 6 would be maintained or stored by node 7. So, joining a network, we need to do some update of the keys of the neighbor nodes. Leaving the network, we need to update the keys of our neighbor nodes. But if there were 1 million nodes in the network, this only supports 16, but in a real cord network, if there were 1 million computers, then again, joining the network only involves updating of keys with neighbor nodes, a maximum of 2 nodes. And same with leaving. So joining and leaving is an easy, relatively easy option, easy operation. We just reassign the keys. Here's an example if a node leaves the network. Node 6 leaves the network, then the keys would be reassigned to node 7. So that's joining and leaving the network. So that's our example that we're going to use for the next operations. Maybe we'll just use the example and talk about the concepts later. Now, so we have nodes in the network. Resources are distributed amongst those nodes. If we have our file, and this file is made of node 1, that is, this computer has the file available to share, then it needs to insert this resource into the system, and let's say we take and returns the value, let's say 13, a hash of the resource returns the value 13. This is the key. Therefore, node 1, which has the file, either transfers the entire file to node 14, node 14, because the resource has key 13. The node that manages that key is node 14. So they transfer the entire file to node 14, or simply send some message saying that if someone is searching for this file, it's available at node 1. So node 14 knows about the relationship between this file and the key 13. Let's do the first case where we transfer the entire file to the node that has that key. And there'll be other resources made available by the other nodes in the system. So now let's try to search. In this case, node 0 wants to find the file. So the person that using this computer wants to find the file Ubuntu.iso. So what it does, they take a hash of the file, or it could be the file name, or they already have the hash of the entire file. It gives them the key, 13, and now we search for key 13. Here's one way to search. Send a search query to every node or to the successor nodes that exist in the network. Remember, of the 16 nodes, not all nodes exist. Node 0 doesn't know which nodes exist in the network. If there are, in this case, we have 7 nodes, node 0 doesn't know which nodes exist. So one approach would be to know about only your successor node. Node 0 knows the IP address of node 1. So let's record that. Node 0 has some routing table. And that routing table says that node 1 is available at some IP address. And it's on the previous slide. I don't have it, but we'd have the IP of node 1. You have lecture notes. It is, go back to the previous, on slide 26, the node with D1 had an IP of something 64.233 on slide 26. That is, knows that node 1, its successor, has an IP address. If we know its IP address, we can communicate with that node. Similar, node 1. Which says its successor node, node 3 in this case, has some IP address. Each node would have a routing table which has the successor node and their IP address. Every node has one route in that. Therefore, search would follow these steps. Node 0 is looking for key 13. Searching for key 13. It doesn't know which node or which IP address has that. It only knows about one other node in the network. Therefore, it sends a search query to that node saying, do you have key 13? No, it does not. It only has key 1. So it sends the request to its successor node because node 1 knows about only one successor, node 3. This one doesn't have key 13. It sends to its successor until it reaches, 9, 11. The search request reaches node 14. Node 14 has the resource or the data with key 13 and therefore can respond either direct to node 0 or via the path that it came via. So this is one way to do a search. Every node maintains a routing table. in that routing table is the ID of its successor and the IP address of that node. When we search, simply send the query to our successor node. And we will find the resource. In this case, the number of queries we sent or forward was 6. We had to forward that message 6 times to reach the destination. That can be inefficient. In this case, we have a maximum of 16 nodes. If we have 1 million nodes in the network, then we may have to forward a query 500,000 times to reach the destination. Because the nodes are randomly located and the resources are randomly distributed, then searching using this approach can take many query messages. So it can be inefficient from that perspective or slow to find the resource. The benefit of this approach is that each node has a very simple routing table. It has just one entry. Node 0, for this search to work, needs to know the IP address of one other node. Node 1 needs to know the IP address of one other node. That's the advantage in this approach. CORD and DHTs in general do not use this approach. They try to make the search faster. The idea is to, instead of maintaining routes to one node, your successor, maintain routes to a set node. And maintain routes to a set of nodes which are one position away from you, that's your immediate successor, two positions away, four positions, and eight positions away. We'll see why. Let's draw one more case. Let's consider a theoretical case where all 16 nodes exist. And let's say all nodes exist. Our example was 7. All nodes existed in the system. In the first, every node maintained a link to their successor node. Therefore, to search, it can take many search queries to find the destination. But let's consider an alternative where every node maintains a link or a route to the successor node, which is one position away, to a node which is two positions away, four positions, and eight positions away. Because we have a maximum of 16 nodes, what we do is 1, 2, 4, and 8. There's double each time. Of course, 16 positions away from node 0. Node would have that structure of routing information. What we say are the neighbors or the known route, node 0. It has a route to node 1, 2, 4, and 8. Node 1 would have routes to node 2, 3, 5, and 9. Because from node 1, one position away is node 2, two positions is node 3, four is node 5, and eight positions is node 9. Node 8, node 9, 10, 12, and 0. 1, 2, 4, 8 positions away. Every node would have routes in that structure. If we have that, then search can be very if node 0 is searching for, as we had before, key 13, where does it send the query? If node 0 is searching for key 13, where should it send it? Send it to position or to node 2, 4, or 8. Well, if we're searching for 13, of those four options, 1, 2, 4, and 8, closest one is 8. Because 13, we know 13 is greater than 8. Therefore, send the query to node 8. Now, node 8 has routes to nodes 9, 10, 12. Searching for key 13, the closest one would be node 12. Node 12 would have routes 13, 14, 0, 5. We're searching for key 13. The closest one is, of course, and it's direct, is node 13. So send to 8, to 12, to 13, if all nodes existed. Node 5, node 0 was searching for key node 5. It would send the closest neighbor. And in this case, it's node 4. The structure of maintaining routes to nodes which are 1, 2, 4, 8 positions away makes routing or searching very fast. It's a trade-off between making the search very fast, sending or minimizing the number of times we send a query, and minimizing the number of routes we maintain to other nodes. In our previous case, every node maintains a route to just one other node. In this case, every node maintains a route to four other nodes. This one's but searching will be faster in this case. So in fact, this is what core and general DHTs use. So coming back to our example, node 0 maintains routes. This is the case in all nodes. Node 0 maintains routes 1, 2, 4, and 8. But not all nodes exist. So what do we do? If node 0 should maintain routes to 1, 2, 4, and 8, if they do not exist, we take the next node along that does exist. So node 0 maintains routes to 1, 2, 2 doesn't exist. Next node that does is 3. Node 4 doesn't exist, next node is 7, and node 8, next node is 9. So these red lines indicate the routes in the routing table node by node, known by node 0. And we assume that node 0 maintains these routes. It knows the IP addresses of those four nodes. Similar, node 1 should have routes to node 2. It doesn't exist, so let's take 3, because that node 2 is one position away. Node 3 is two positions away, but we already have a route to node 3. Four positions away from node 1, it's 5. Therefore, we take the next node, node 7. 8 positions away from node 1 is node 9. So in this specific case, node 1 only has 3 routes to nodes 3, 7, and 9. Let's record them, record the routes that we have for this node, and then we'll see the search. This is complex, but it's important. So we need to go through the entire case, and then we'll have one final example. So now every node has a routing table. That routing table should have routes to nodes which are, in our case, 1, 2, 4, and 8 positions away from our node. Except if that node doesn't exist, take the next node along. So node 0 should have a routing table to node 1. Node 1 exists, so that's okay. To node 2, 2 positions away from node 0 is node 2. 2 doesn't exist, so the next node will be node 3. 4 positions away from node 0 is 4. 4 doesn't exist, so we get node 7. 8 positions away from node 0 is 8. 8 doesn't exist, so we get node 9. And that's the previous slide. The node 1 routing table one position away from node 1 is node 2. Node 2 does not exist. The next node that exists is 3. 2 positions away from node 1 is node 3. Well, we already have a route to node 3. Two routes. It's the same. Doesn't exist. Next node is 7. 8 positions is node 9. We only need one of these. Routes to nodes 3, 7, and 9. That's what's shown here. 3, 7, and 9. Quickly, find the routes for node 3. What nodes does node 3 have routes to? Calculations for node 3. I hope it's not on the slide. That's node 9. So try and calculate, and or an easy way to calculate, okay, we need to be 1, 2, 4, and 8 positions away. One position away from node 3 is 4, 2 is 5, 4 is 7, 8 is 11. And now check whether those nodes exist. If they don't exist, take the next node along. Does 4 exist? No. Next node is 7. Does node 5 exist? No. Next node is 7. We've already got node 7. Node 7 exists? Yes. We've already got node 7. Node 11, does it exist? Yes. So the answer... This is the important information. Yeah. And that's our routing table, or the start of our routing table. If I did that one too quickly, try node 7. It's got the answer for nodes. Try node 7. Okay, let's see in a moment. Remember, one position away should be node 8, should be node 9, be 11. Now we need to check if those exist. No, next node is node 9. Node 9, yes, but maintain routes or one route each potential destination. Node 11 exists. Node 15 does not exist. The next node is node 0. Node 7 maintains routes. Nodes 9, 11. And we do that for all nodes. Now, the next thing, let's go back. This routing table includes some extra information. It contains the next node according to this structure. So this is just a different representation of what I've done. For node 0, the routing table, sometimes called a finger table, because it represents this, the system is called chord. It represents a chord in the musical sense, that we have fingers different locations through the system. Node 0 has routes to nodes 1, 3, 7, and 9. We've calculated that. They are the successor nodes, or the neighbor nodes for node 0. And from node 0's perspective, those neighbors will be used depending on a certain range of keys that we want to search for. What we do is node 1 should have key 1. Node 2 should have key 2, and so on. If all nodes existed, key 3 is stored on node 3. Key 8 is stored on node 8. So from node 0's perspective, the neighbor, which is one position away, we're searching for key one, we should send to that neighbour. If we're searching for key two, we of course should send to neighbour two. If we're searching for key three, we should send to because neighbour 2 should be close to neighbour 3 to send the query on. So we say that if these represent the keys managed from the perspective of node 0 for each successor, node 1 knows where to find key 1, node 2 knows where to find key 2 as well as key 3, node 4 knows where to find 4, 5, 6, and 7. And if we're searching for key 8, we can send direct to node 8. If we're searching for key 9, we should send to node 8, and then 8 would send to 9. If node 0 was searching for key 13, the closest we have, the closest that node 0 has is node 8. So searching for any keys in this half, node 0 send to node 8. We could include node 0. If we're searching for key 0, node 0, it should be local. So routing table includes the success nodes as well as the set of keys that will assume that those successor nodes know about. Determined by, in theory, the neighbor of node 0, one position away, was node 1. That manages key 1. Node 2. And 3, node 4, 4 to 7, node 8, 8 through to 15. Key 0 is stored at node 0. Make key sets and the nodes. We've drawn here. These are the successor nodes, 1, 3, 7, and 9. And the interval of keys, depending on what we're searching for. If we're searching for key 13, it's in this interval, send to successor 9. If we're searching for key 5, send to successor 7. And we use the routing table in that way. Node 9, routing table. Node 9, 1, 2, 4, 8 positions away. Should be 10, 11, 13, and 1. 10, 11, and 12 for the second node. 13, 14, 15, and 0 for the third node. And 1 through to 8. No. And this forms our routing table. No. Yep. Okay, you're correct. For node 9, the one position away, node 10 didn't exist. Node 11 did exist. Node 11, we already have it. When I say dash, in fact, we have nothing there. Node 13 should be node, in our case, 14 exists. That's what we have, 11, 14, and 1. And the interval of keys that each successor node manages, from node 9's perspective, is listed here. So every node has a routing table, and this set of keys that they... or the interval of keys for each successor node. Now, search is simply using the routing tables. If node 0 is searching for key 13, we look up the routing table. Key 13 falls in this interval. Send to neighbor 9. So we send the query to node 9. Node 9 receives this query, searching for key 13. Key 13 in this interval, here it is, send to node 14. Node 14 receives the query. Node 14, if we go back to our slides, has the key 13. And now we've found our resource that we're searching for. So in that case, the search takes 2 messages to reach the destination. So the question is, what happens if we have more than 16 nodes? We just expand using the same concept. Here we have 16 nodes. Therefore, every node has 4 neighbors. Log base 2 of 16 is 4. 4 neighbors, which are 1, 2, 4, and 8 positions away. If we had 32 nodes, we'd have 5 neighbors, which are 1, 2, 4, 8, and 16 positions away. If we have our 160-bit hash, which has 2 to the power of 160 nodes, then we have 160 neighbors. 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, up to 2 to the power of 159 positions away. So with 2 to the power of 160 nodes, maximum nodes, we'd have 160 neighbors. But remember, 2 to the power of 160 is large enough to support all of the computers in the world. 160 neighbors is not so many. But yes, we use the same concept. This is just a simple example. And that structure makes search efficient. So that just describes the search. So let's just, for the last 2 minutes, look at our example. Every node in a peer system has an ID. Keys. Each node manages a set of keys, and they are the keys which have the same ID, as well as the predecessor keys. Node 11 manages key 11, 10, 9, and 8, because nodes 10, 9, and 8 don't exist. Inserting new nodes into the system, if a new node wants to join, we need to reassign those keys. If a node wants to leave the network, we reassign the keys. This is not how search works. It's just illustrating the inefficiencies if we maintain links just for our successor, just to one successor. Search could be very long. We have to send many queries to reach the destination. So that's one alternative which we don't use. What we do instead is maintain a few more successors, in this case a total of 4 successors, or maximum. So they are showing the neighbors and the routing table. And then from that routing table, we use that to search. So in our case, our example, node 0 searching for key 13. Routing table says send to node 9. Send the query to node 9. Node 9 has the query searching for key 13. Routing table says send to node 14. We send to 14. And from what we've seen before, node 14 manages the key 13. It has the answer and it can send the result, usually direct to node 0, because the query would include the source node address. So now search, the number of messages we need to send can be reduced, making search faster. So that's the trade-off there. We have faster search, but we have some more neighbors in the routing table. Maintaining a routing table adds some complexity and overhead. What we'll do in the last lecture this afternoon is go through one of the exam questions, which just recaps on all of this again. So have another opportunity to explain those concepts and then summarize on the advantages and disadvantages of distributed hash tables, as well as our original three schemes, Nutella, Napster, and FastTrack. So see if you can get your head around some of those basic concepts, and this afternoon we'll go through an exam question which illustrates them again. Okay? It's enough for this morning.